Sri Chaitanya Manavistam Sabitam Janavutale Sayam Vishnu Sakundanti Vansa Kalpa Tivyakya Kripta Sindhu Vayedicha Kripta Nam Padaneyo Vaisudeya Who remembers anything from yesterday's presentation that I gave as opposed to the presentation that Mataji gave? Yes.
The kings display to their citizens in a certain fashion, but at the palace they reveal themselves more intimately.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much. They reveal who they are, their nature, their personality. They can do that in the inner chambers of the palace. Why? Why can they do that, and why can't they do that in the sitting in the court when the citizens come in? There's actually there was one king in India who had a rope that went to the city, the center of the city, the town square. And that rope was attached to a bell in his courtyard. And any time any citizen had a complaint, or a grievance, a difficulty, they could pull the bell, ring the bell in the courtyard, and walk in. Now why can't the king act in a relaxed way there, and why can he act in a relaxed and personal way at home? Why?
Because they become too familiar.
That's one of the difficulties of being a parent. you have to be a little bit of aloofness sometimes, so that it, which is not the way that Kali Yuga parenting is going, by the way. You see that sometimes the children will call their parents by their first name. And Krishna, he was a little afraid of Mother Yashoda. Nandamaraj was a little easier to control. He was a little afraid of Mother Yashoda. So how is this possible that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is all powerful, consider what that means. We should open up that door a little bit, and if it wasn't so cold, we'd open up the windows and everything, and we'd look outside and look at the trees and look at the sky and look at the earth. Yeah, open up that door a little bit, because it can get too hot anyway. And this entirety of existence is coming from the Ishwara, the God, the Supreme Lord. Yeah. That's what, by the way, in schools, especially in elementary school, they'll never put windows low. They always have the windows high, because the children's minds will never be in the classroom. They can look out. Really, they consciously do that. But this entirety of existence, the clouds, the different seasons, the moon, the stars, the sun, in one universe, and what to speak of, it's all coming from God, the Ishwara, Param Satyam. And here is God just playing with his friends, and as we saw yesterday, he's stealing butter. And yet, when his mother wishes to chastise him, he's actually afraid. Who can explain this? Raise your hand. who will explain it very briefly. This is the most difficult topic, not to just describe and just say it by words, but to actually deeply understand, because it takes depth of understanding of the actual nature of that Supreme Person, of God, of the Parameshwara, of the Param Satyam. Why is he afraid of Mahayashoda? Why are tears running down his eyes when she's, "You've stolen butter again, I'm going to have a stick in my hand"? And he's so afraid that she's thinking, "Oh, he's too afraid," and that's not good, that he's too afraid. Of course, he's a good actor also, he knows how to make Mother Yashoda put down the stick. But she thought, "I have to chastise him, otherwise who knows what he's going to steal when he grows up. He might steal others' wives or something like that even." Yes. What's the answer? One time when I was in Bangladesh, one converted Christian, he said to me, "How can you worship a God who steals the wife, who dances with the wives of others in the middle of the night?" What's the proper answer to that? Yes.
You're already Krishna's wife.
Yeah. How can you steal one of Krishna's wives? Rascal, that's wrong. Everything belongs to Krishna, and you're thinking something belongs to you, you rascal? You're the thief. He's not the thief, you're the thief. Rascal. At least 20 times. Because we're thieves, we see Krishna as the thief. It's all coming from him. What's the proof that it's not ours, that nothing in this world is ours? We can't take it, and we're always in anxiety, just like a thief. Thief has something, and he's always in anxiety, because a thief cannot be peaceful or happy. So we're always in anxiety about our possessions. There was one man came and saw Prabhupada. He was an industrialist in Mumbai, and he would make, he made glass and sold glass. So he Prabhupada asked him what he did. He said he has a big factory selling glass, making some glass, and Prabhupada asked him where the glass comes from. He was making it, and what was the answer? Glass comes from sodium silicate or something like that. Sand. Where does the sand come from? It comes from the beach. From the beach. Did you make the beach? Did you make the sand? No. Sarup Damodar, Prabhupada's dear servant, said, "What do we call people who take from God?" Thief, to the Prabhupada. "But I give in charity," the man said. "Oh, you're an honest thief." Prabhupada was so clear, and he was so right in your face, as they say. So, Krishna, the absolute truth, the supreme, the unlimited personality of Godhead, he was punished by Mother Yashoda for stealing, and he cried and cried as long as she was present, and then he pulled the grinding mortar between two trees. The trees fell down, and what didn't break? And why didn't the rope break? You remember? Yeah, because she's the one who tied it. Even Balaram wouldn't untie it, the rope. And then Nalakuvera, Manigriva came out, and they offered prayers. Does anyone remember anything from those prayers? Yes.
The end of the prayer, they mentioned that nothing is separate from Krishna.
Yeah. Nothing. You are the supreme Brahman. I offer my respects to everything, everything in existence, because it is not different from you. And very, this is the view of devatas, of the Supreme Absolute Truth. They know His power. They are mostly conscious of His power, His Aishwarya. And then, amazingly enough, they have to leave after seeing this most beautiful, after witnessing His pastimes in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj, and then seeing Krishna display a little bit of His power by pulling down the trees. Then they asked to leave because they didn't have the right consciousness to be there. Contrast Mother Yashoda's consciousness, who was chastising him with their consciousness. So one would think that their consciousness was superior to her consciousness, because they were so conscious of His power, of how wonderful He was. But her consciousness was unlimitedly superior. And there's one verse, I have it nearby, just give me a moment. I think it's in the earlier chapter. Such a nice verse that neither, this is from the 20th verse of the 9th chapter. Neither Lord Brahma, nor Lord Shiva, nor even the goddess of fortune, Neham Vrinchino Nabhavanatri, even the goddess of fortune, who is always the better half of the Supreme Lord, can obtain from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the deliverer from this material world, such mercy as received by Yashodama. She was the recipient of so much mercy because her love was so strong that she caused him to cry when she wanted to chastise him. Her disappointment with him for stealing. Her love was so great that it controlled he who is the supreme controller. So how much mercy does one have required to be in that kind of position? And that is the highest kind of mercy. Not to control God is the desire, but when one has such love, then one is in the topmost position. Just think of what we want in this world and compare it to that, our little thieveries that we have going on in our mind, what we want, gross and subtle, trying to enjoy. We have to be like this, because to have a false ego means to be in the consciousness of I am my body, aham mamiti, and what I and anything connected to it is mine. This is what it means to be in the illusion of having a false ego. And therefore devotional service means to dissolve the false ego, to dissolve it, and to be situated in real identity as a servant of Krishna. So the trees fell down and they offered prayers. The demigods, the Upadevatas, offered prayers, and then they left. And then the residents of Vrindavan all came rushing to the scene. Why did they come? Why did they come rushing there? Yes.
There was a big noise.
There was a huge, like they thought it like a thunderbolt had hit. But it was the wrong season for thunderbolts. What season was it? It was Kartik Mas. Who was the presiding deity, predominating presiding deity of Kartik Mas. So they were immediately fearful that something unfortunate had happened to beloved Krishna. Their consciousnesses of all the Vrishbhasis, everyone, everything was centered simply on how, what do I have to be able to offer Krishna? What do I have? What has, by my fate, by my karma, by my, what has Krishna, what has God given me? And how can I offer that in a way that will be pleasing to Him? They weren't going through those type of thoughts, but those are the kind of thoughts that we should be going through. What gifts do I have that can I return to Krishna, like the offering of the Ganga Jal to the Ganga? He is the ocean of opulence, and every opulence is His energy, and He is the reservoir. So out of the tiny drop that I've been given, and everyone has something, a drop or two, how can I return that to Him and make that an offering to Him with devotion? That's what can, how can I please Him? So the cowherd men came, they found Krishna, the young friends of Krishna told what had happened, and most of the cowherd men, including Nanda Maharaj, didn't believe the cowherd boys. Why? Why didn't they believe him? Them? Because what?
Can we,
yeah, but why? Yes, a little bit deeper. Why didn't they believe the young boys who said, oh, Krishna pulled down the trees, and then two shining men came out, and then they, after some time, they talked to Krishna and then they disappeared. Well, there's obvious reasons why, you know, it sounds like a good story. Yes, but just a little bit more.
They thought him as a little boy.
Yes, and to think of him as so powerful would have disallowed them from thinking of him as he's our boy and we have to take care of him. So there would have been a competition between their madhurya, the sweetness of their love and knowledge of his aishwarya, his power, and their sweetness of their love overpowered the knowledge of his power. So they couldn't think in that way. So we can understand these things knowing their truths theoretically, but try to get a glimpse of how much love that actually is and how much they simply thought of him and they were captivated by him and his wonderful qualities, and that's and they didn't want anything from him. Therefore the concept of God as the Son, as your Son, is much more, is superior to God as the Father, because you want from your Father and you want to give to your Son. So how we say that one type of relationship with the Ishwara, God, is superior to another? How do you measure? How do you measure the superiority of one relationship or another? Think for a moment. Just think practically. How do you measure this superiority of one relationship with another. Maybe, Aditya, could you ask the children to use Bhima somewhere else? Maybe you could move the, you can be the kid herdsman. How do you measure, how can we say, by what standard do we say that one relationship is regarded as superior to another? Because every religion says, well, mine's the best, mine's the best, mine's the best. Well, how do you, well, what standard do we use? Raise your hand if you have an idea about this one. Okay. Manoj. Okay, that means the more reciprocation you have from him, the way he reciprocates. Okay, that wasn't the one I was looking for exactly. Yeah. Yes, of course. Maybe we have to move them a little further. I have to herd them a little bit down the road. Okay. Well, what standard? I'm talking about an objective standard. Well, just think, what makes a relation, one who has, who you have a deep relationship with, what makes it deep? Intimacy. Yes. Yes, that's basically
when you serve someone without any motivation.
Huh?
When you serve someone.
Yeah. But how do you, it's intimacy. How close the person, you know everything about them, they know everything about you, and you still like each other even. You love them. There's no barriers, there's nothing between. It's so like the two souls become one, practically. And so we see the painting of Radha and Krishna, so it's one soul, practically, they're intertwined. You don't see that one so much anymore. But intimacy. So which is more intimate? Oh God, give me this or this. Or Mother Yasoda's relationship, or the cowherd boy's relationship, or the gopis and Krishna's relationship. It's so intimate. There's no reverence at all. And it is so intimate, they're so close, that the result of that is that their love is so deep they can control the Supreme Personality of Godhead, practically speaking. So as we move on, these are the next verses. We saw how Krishna was under the control of Mother Yashoda. But now we're going to learn more about Braja, even. This, we're looking for text. Part 4, text 7. No. Yes. One back. See, in text 7, go back one, see what happens. Yes. This is the next section, 7 through 11 in chapter 11. This chapter is entitled The Childhood Pastimes of Krishna. So these two verses, 7 and 8, are a pair of verses, and they show how not only Mother Yashoda controlled Krishna and had such an intimate relationship with Krishna, but so did the other senior ladies and the other senior gopis and other residents of Vrindavan. So the gopis would say, remember that who they're speaking to. They didn't remember who they were speaking to, but we have to remember who they're speaking to. The gopis would say, if you dance, my dear Krishna, then I shall give you half a sweetmeat. Now, raise your hand if you've ever done any puja to Krishna. Yeah. Raise your hand if in that puja you offered him a sweet. That's almost everyone, because everyone all over the world is offering Krishna sweets. But yet, the gopis, these aren't the young gopis, these are the senior gopis, the elderly gopis. I will give you half a sweetmeat, sweet if you dance. And by saying these words, or by clapping their hands, all the gopis encourage little baby Krishna in different ways. And I've seen this in India. They sometimes train the little children to just little, and it's so cute. They dance, they have in a crude way. Have you ever seen that? Yeah, they sort of a little, but it's so cute. They dance and approximate the steps of dancing, of Bharatanatyam dancing, and it's so cute. And everyone gets pleasure from that. So Krishna would reciprocate, and they'd be bribing him to dance for a sweet. And at such times, although he was supremely, what's the next word? Yes? Powerful. You knew that. Although he was the supremely powerful personality of Godhead, he would smile and dance. They would control him in that way. He would smile and dance according to their desire if he was a wooden doll in their hands. What is the Hindi word for the kind of wooden doll? It's called Putli. Bengali? Putulna. We know those. Or puppet in English. The puppet, the Putulna, you pull the strings and it dances. So they were able to make Krishna dance in the same way. And remember that there's this most beautiful, beautifully attractive little child who's not dressed practically, but dressed in little in jewels with a peacock feather on his head and perfectly formed and beautiful eyes and chubby cheeks, and the complexion is like a monsoon cloud in a monsoon season that's full of rain with lightning, and he folds into it, and he's got a smile, and his eyes are always moving this way and that, and his lotus feet are soft and tinged red. And he's so attractive, and he's clever like anything. And he's naughty like anything. And there he is. Oh, Krishna, you dance, we'll give you a sweet. And he starts dancing for the sweet.
It's not even a full sweet, it's half a sweet.
It's even half a sweet. Make sure you give him the full sweet next time you help with a puja. As if he was Karputli. Is that Karputli? And sometimes he would sing very loudly at their bidding. They'd say, sing, Krishna, sing, sing. And he would sing. In this way, Krishna came completely under the control of the gopis. And the gopis were completely under the control of Krishna, because their minds were simply captivated by him. And this is what intimacy of love is. Everyone is enwrapped completely in the other person on every level. Just thinking of the other person. They can't pull their mind away. So when Krishna sent Uddhava to the gopis to remove their anxiety, and after he had left Vrindavan, he told them that Krishna told Uddhava to tell them that you can meditate on me and be associating with me even though I'm away, just by meditating on me. And their reply was, you're telling us to meditate on you? That's not quite our problem. Our problem is we can't stop meditating on you and thinking about you. So we don't need your philosophy. So this is intimacy of love. This is... Someone asked me what the word... about someone being Raganuga, whether who was it? It was Prahlad Maharaj, or the Mahajan being Raganuga. But what does Raganuga mean? What does Raganuga mean? Spontaneous. But what does Rag mean? Attachment. And Atmika means full of attachment. So the Ragatmika devotees are the residents of Braja. And Raga, there's the word in Rajak, like the washerman. And Raga means to die, not Katam Hogya die, but die means coloring. So when the consciousness is colored completely by Krishna, not because now it's time to chant my rounds, and now it's time to do this, and I have to give this amount, and this, and now I'm supposed to do this. But just naturally and spontaneously, that is Ragatmika. And following in the footsteps of the residents of Vrindavan is called Raganuga. Anuga, you're following behind them by their example. So, the residents of Vrindavan were Ragatmika. They are fully absorbed, and Krishna, and their love is so permeating every atom of their existence, every thought, everything, that Krishna's reciprocation with them is to be under their control. Until, as we read in the 32nd chapter of the 10th canto, that Krishna says, not pariyaham, in dealing with the gopis. He says, not only am I under your control, I can't even reciprocate with you, your love is so pure. I can't reciprocate with you, I'm indebted to you. I remain forever under your debt. This is the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is this amazing path in relationship to God that we are following, intimacy, that it's so complete and powerful. It conquers the all-powerful. Next verse. So here is one example of the other residents of Vrindavan. Here's another one. Sometimes Mother Yashoda and her gopi friends would tell Krishna, Aditya, what would they tell Krishna? You have to read that, the two things they would tell him. Bring this, bring that. Krishna, sometimes you do that with little children. Carry this, carry this. So they would order him to bring a wooden plank, wooden shoes, or a wooden measuring pot. Just some small thing. Krishna, bring this. He is just to play with him, to reciprocate with him. So they tell him something very light to bring first. And he's this little. He falls in. Beautiful. Sweet. Bring this, Krishna. Krishna would run off and he'd bring the wooden shoes. There's a wonderful painting of this. Krishna carrying the wooden shoes of his father that his father would use for his puja. And then they'd ask him to bring something heavier. And something heavier until he couldn't do it. He's lifting Govardhan Hill. It's not that he became that much stronger in the next 6 years. And he's lifting all the planets and the suns and the in universes and throwing Aristasura and Keshi and splitting Bakasura in half, and they ask him to lift this, and he's in the mood of just a little boy, And he oh, it's too much for you, Krishna. You're not strong enough. And Krishna says, no, I'm very strong. Like that. See? And he hold it up a little bit. And he just melted everyone in Braj's heart by his childlike activities, because in addition to him performing these simple activities, he's all attractive and all beautiful and all clever and all strong, and he keeps going back and forth in the leelas in the 10th canto between showing off the sweetness, and then so we don't think that he's just an ordinary little boy, then the demigods come down and offer prayers, or he lifts a hill, or he takes Vatsasura, which I doubt we'll get to hear, and throws him and wheels him around. So sometimes they would order him to bring a wooden plank, wooden shoes, or a wooden measuring pot, and Krishna, when thus ordered by the mothers, would try to bring them. Sometimes, however, as if unable to raise these things, he would touch them and stand there. Now, why does Prabhupada say, as if unable to raise these things? And also, you're all becoming so sarvagya that you even know what time it is in New York right now. Which is very important, by the way. Oh, now you don't anymore. So why does Prabhupada say, as if unable to raise these things? Adrian? He can. Why can he? Because he's God. And yes. But does that mean he's thinking, I can do it, but I'm not going to do it? Because I want to remain a cute little boy? You could say that, but if you did, you would be wrong. It's very difficult to understand what God's consciousness is like. That will say. But according to what we've understood from the acharyas, because that's like a child. Like when there's a little 1-year-old child, and the child asks, you know, where did I come from? And this is an example I often use, and you know, the parents, in New York, they would say, a stork or some kind of a crane brought you. Not one of those cranes they use in the construction of the big buildings, but the bird ones. And you know, oh yes, one day, you know, a crane brought you, or a stork brought you. And what do they say in Tamil Nadu? What's the proper answer for this? We ask the mothers, and the kids don't ask the fathers these things anyway. What? Huh? From God, that's much more pious. Nowadays, they say we got you on sale in Big W or something. Yeah, God brought you. It's true, actually. But why don't we explain it? Because you can't explain it, because their consciousness has no conceptual ability to understand. It's beyond their conceptual ability. So for us to understand what Krishna's consciousness is like is not possible, because our consciousness is tiny and insignificant, and his consciousness is unlimited. But our acharyas say that he's two things. He's sarvagya, which means, and mugdata, which means like bewildered or compressed. So in the presence of Mother Yashoda's love and the love of the residents of Vrindavan, his consciousness, he forgets his power and acts just like a small child. So he doesn't have to think that, oh, if I act as a all-powerful person, it's going to upset the rasa. Sometimes Krishna does that with Mother Yashoda too. And you'll actually hear one of those incidents a little bit later. But anyway, Krishna's consciousness is hard to understand, but our consciousness is relatively easy to understand. That we will tend to think, oh, this is just some story about some mythological person, and he's not, and they've made it as if he's all powerful. He's just an ordinary little boy, so therefore Prabhupada makes sure that we understand that by making sure it's as if he's unable to raise these things. We need to be reminded. And then he would just touch them. And just to invite the pleasure of his relatives, he would strike his body with his arms to show that he has sufficient strength. A little boy doing that is so cute. An all-attractive little boy doing that is unlimitedly cute. Next. Now, here is the result. Here is the result of Krishna performing these activities that consume the consciousness of everyone in Vrindavan. Please repeat after me. Darshayam Sadvidam Loka.
Darshayam Sadvidam Loka.
Atmano Vrityavasyatam.
Atmano Vrityavasyatam.
Vrajasyo Bahavai Harsham.
Vrajasyo Bahavai Harsham.
Bhagavan Balachestitaha.
Bhagavan Balachestitaha.
So, darshan means the word by word translation is exhibiting, but we can also say allowing to see tadvidam. That persons, the classification of persons who are very qualified in this world to understand atmano, how Krishna, the Supreme Lord, to let the qualified persons understand how the Supreme Lord is Brityavasyatam. Do you know what that word means? Brityavasyatam. You know, vas means under the control of. How that the Supreme Lord puts himself under the control of his devotees, of his servants. He serves them. So to let the qualified persons, the ones who are worshipping, not the impious people, but the qualified persons who are worshipping God like this, understand the degree of intimacy that it is possible, intimacy of relationship that it is possible to have with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to God, to Parameshwara. He exhibits these activities, and therefore, Vajosvaha by Harsham, he gives them ever increasing happiness. He's always increasing his happiness. How Bhagavan Balachestitaha by these activities of Krishna's activities in Braja as a little boy. Next. To pure devotees throughout the world who could understand his activities, who had quality, qualification, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna exhibited how much he can be subdued by his devotees, his servants. That in the intimacy of the relationship, he wants to please them. He's not like a dictator who sits up on the throne and everyone has to serve me, otherwise they cannot be happy. No. And they're serving him. And those people who have that relationship with God, they serve him, but they're always afraid and they're And the love is limited because they want to be happy and they want protection. But the residents of Vrindavan and Krishna had a different kind of relationship. Their love was so great that he was completely under their control. Next. In this way, he increased the pleasure of the Brijbasis by his childhood activities. So this is, Krishna is enjoying this. This is his enjoyment. He's Lila Purushottama. His leelas, he is the enjoyer of all leela. But his enjoyment is also increasing the pleasure of the devotees, of glorifying them and increasing their happiness. Next pastime, 10 and 11, another pastime. He said, once. So it's not only these people, but everyone in Vrindavan. Once a woman selling fruit was calling out, Aditya, but you have to do it with some. Now you have to, for a moment, become the Brijbasi girl, lady, who is selling fruit. Okay, who can do this with like a, you're not a good fruit seller. Although everyone here would certainly buy fruit. Who can, well, it should be to get the right Mataji voice. Any Mataji fruit sellers here? Yes, which one? Okay, Sweta, sell us some fruit. I mean, sell. Oh, and go.
All inhabitants of Rajabhumi, if you want to purchase some fruits, come here.
Wow. There was a bit of an order in there, too. I wasn't there, we noticed. Immediately. Upon hearing this, Krishna immediately took some grains. Went to barter, trade, as if he needed some fruits. He was attracted. He wanted some of those fruits. Next. While Krishna was going to the fruit vendor very hastily, most of the grain, so he wanted a barter. Most of the grains, he was so running in haste, and the grains just slipped through his fingers. So by the time he got to the lady, there was nothing in his hands even. But she saw this most beautiful boy, little boy. There's a wonderful painting of this one. I don't have it up here, but this little boy. He's just so cute. Can you see? He's just so cute. He's so cute. He's so cute. He's really very attractive. And she was completely attracted to him. And the way he smiled, the cute way he was moving. Give me fruit. One fruit. And that he, the innocence of his gesture and the grains, there's nothing there anymore. And she, her heart was just so taken by him, melted and taken by him. So she said, okay. So she filled, she had a basket that was full of fruit, and she filled Krishna's hands with fruits. So, our acharyas explain that she kept on putting fruits, and even though he's a little boy, and how many fruits can this little boy carry? But his Aishwarya Shakti, his potency, made sure that he could carry everything, and that's how Krishna can perform these activities without being, without using his powers and thinking, oh, I have to use my powers to carry all this, or I have to use my powers to do this or that. But rather, his shaktis, his energies, act independently, all in the service of Krishna and his desire of the Leela. So his Aishwarya Shakti acted independently by its own knowing what to do, and gave Krishna the ability at that time, without having him to consider, how am I going to carry all this food? She's giving me more and more and more. No, he was able to carry all the food in her basket. And she became stunned. She couldn't do anything. She couldn't take her mind off of Krishna for a moment. In ecstasy, looking at this charming pastime. And her fruit basket was immediately filled with jewels and gold. And actually, she didn't even notice. And Krishna went inside at that time, carrying the fruit. And she was just stunned. And Krishna went to give the fruit to his mother. And what he did, Acharya's explained, he took a sari, her sari, and at the end of her sari, he took all the fruit and filled him. Where did you get this from? Oh, there was one very fortunate lady outside, and she gave them to me. I gave her, she gave them to me. You took this from someone outside? Yes. It's not like you can trust everyone like you trust everyone here. Did your mothers tell you that? We used to say, don't take candy from strangers. Did your parents tell you that? Yes? No, yes, yes, no, yes, yes.
The fear was not there.
In the village, yes. But you didn't live in New York. In Bombay? Yeah. But in the village, everyone, it's one big family. There's one of the devotees in Perth, he told me, and he grew up in Bombay, and he's under 30. But when he was growing up, he was living in one apartment building, like everyone else in Bombay. And in the building, that all the doors were always open for the children, and they would just go from one apartment to the next, and every apartment, everyone would feed them and everything. And he said that I actually, until I was much older, I didn't know which ones my parents were. So how much affection was there? Just growing up with that, surrounded by so much affection. It's so wonderful what that does for the consciousness, to grow up with so much affection. It gives one so much internal strength. And you become so strong, you're even strong enough to try to cross the street in Bombay against the traffic. And you have to be pretty brave to be able to do that. Yes? I think so, anyway. Bombay boy. So Mother Yasoda said, don't, you can't trust everyone like you trust everyone inside. And Krishna said, what does, the way that it's translated, what does mistrust mean? I don't know what mistrust means. I don't know what not to trust means. And meanwhile, the fruit seller, she went home. Why did she go home? Because she wanted to bring more fruit. So she came back after, when she went back, she noticed that her basket was full of jewels and gold.
Now, let's see if I can quickly find it. I know it's not on here. There's a comment. Yes.
His mother said, "Where did you get these fruits?" And Krishna, in half words, speaking broken words like a child, an old and fortunate woman collected some fruit and taking the price in grain, she gave me this fruit. "Oh, child, oh, Vatsa, do not trust old people like you can trust the people in this house. What does mistrust mean?" And seeing the fruit seller return after some time, Krishna again went to her, and then had his mother distribute the fruits to others at every opportunity. His mother blissfully distributed the fruit with her trembling hand, but could never exhaust the fruit, and for several days she remained smiling and astonished, and those who tasted the fruit became surprised by its sweetness and could not forget it. Oh, but there's another, must be by. That how the fruit seller lady, she was just so captivated by the jewel of Krishna's presence that she could not even see the jewels that Krishna had given her, practically. And she attained such a level of prema like that. Just by, and Prabhupada's purport is really, really nice in this regard. Prabhupada explains. And Prabhupada brings it to a context after explaining the sweetness of the Leela, but he brings it to relevant points for us. And he says, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, "Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhaktya prayachati taraham." Yes. Krishna is so kind that if anyone offers him a leaf, a fruit, a flower, or some water, he will immediately accept it. The only condition is that these things should be offered with bhakti. Yome bhakti prayasati. Otherwise, if one is puffed up with a false prestige, thinking, "I have so much opulence and I'm giving something to Krishna," one's offering will not be accepted by Krishna. The fruit vendor, although a woman belonging to the poor aborigine class, dealt with Krishna with great affection, saying, "Krishna, you have come to me to take some fruit in exchange for grains. All the grains have fallen, but still you may take whatever you like." Thus she filled Krishna's palms with whatever fruit he could carry. In exchange, Krishna filled her whole basket with jewels and gold. From this incident, one should learn that for anything offered to Krishna with love and affection, Krishna can reciprocate many millions of times over, both materially and spiritually. The basic principle involved is an exchange of love. Therefore, Krishna teaches in Bhagavad Gita, "Yatkarosi yatyasi yatkapajasi Satkarupa Marapranam." O son of Kunti, all that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer and give away, as well as all austerities that you may perform, should be done as an offering to me. With love and affection. What did I just say? With love and affection. One should try to give something to Krishna from one source of income. Then one's life will be successful. Krishna is full in all opulences. He does not need anything from anyone. But if one is prepared to give something to Krishna, that is for one's own benefit. the example given in this connection is that when one's real face is decorated, the reflection of one's face is automatically decorated. So similarly, if we try to serve Krishna with all our opulences, we, as parts and parcels or reflections of Krishna, will become happy in exchange. Krishna is always happy, for he is Atmarama, fully satisfied with his own opulence. Okay. Go on to the next one. So that's the end of part four. Any questions or comments in this regard? Yes.
In the context of Krishna forgetting that he's God, the Mayavadis also say that we are all God, but we are God, when they have a point to produce this, they lack to back them as the love and how would we see them?
Yes. Question is, they also, if Krishna can forget he's God, why isn't that we're God and we've forgotten? Because we can't act like God. So Krishna, at the right time, he doesn't lose his powers in any way. Like the king in his most intimate chambers, remember that at the beginning? He's still all powerful. He could be sitting there, sitting at the dinner table with his whole family. And then someone can come in, one of the guards can come and say, "Sire, there's a thief. He's done this and this and this and this." And the king can say, "Yes, of course. What else would he say? Off with his head." So kings do for a living. Off with his head. And his head comes off. So the fact that he could be sitting there at the table and just thinking about the nice prasadam he's eating or something like that. About the taste of this, and he's thinking about his son, but he doesn't lose. So in those moments, he's still the king. But this is a more intimate aspect of the king. So he can be forget he's God, and then the next moment the Govardhan Hill. And ourselves, what can we do to exhibit that we're the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Well, if you can do it, do it, let's see. And that's what Prabhupada said while Krishna showed the universal form to Arjuna. He was driving the chariot of Arjuna like like Arjuna's servant, but then Arjuna asked to see his opulence that he had just described in chapter 10. In chapter 11, Krishna showed him the universal form. Mahaprabhu showed that to Advaita Charya and Nityananda Prabhu. Krishna shows it to his mother. But the Mayavadis can't show anything. As Prabhupada said in Vrindavan, there's a lot of people distribute, try to get some spiritual piety and distribute food to the sadhus. So there's lots of even Mayavadis come, and Prabhupada said the problem is there's more sadhus than chapatis. So they're saying they're God, but there's not enough chapatis. But that never happens with this one, for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But good question, good question. Yes.
Because she makes sweets from the milk, so she was thinking about that. Another answer is that milk is also a devotee, so she wanted to, did not want it overboiled. But the basic point is she displeased Krishna.
No. But there's always, when you understand Leela, or try to understand Krishna's Leela, there's two points of view. One is from the point of view of rasa, and one is from the point of view of tattva. One is from the point of view of the sweetness of the exchange, and the other is the philosophical truth regarding that. So from the point of view of the philosophical point of view, the tadiram samacharam, the most important thing is those things that are tadiya, or connected to Krishna. So the milk is used to serve Krishna, so therefore that was Mother Yasoda's mood. It was only for Krishna's service. So the question is, why did Krishna become angry? That's basically then, right? Is that basically your question?
Here also she is feeding Krishna, but here, okay, that is for her service, but here between, she stopped feeding Krishna. So that, I mean, that itself is...
Right. So why did she stop feeding Krishna? What would you do? The milk pot is boiling over. Because you're talking from the mood of a mother. How can she possibly do that? Which was Krishna's mood. How can she do this? I'm so angry. Yes.
Couldn't she have like carried him in?
Another mother. Yeah. Why did you do that? Could she have? But we're going too many different directions here. So from the point of view of a mother, you're taking the point of view of Krishna there. But from the point, what would you do? The milk pot is boiling over, and your child, you've just been feeding him, and you're singing, and how long does it take to turn down to stop it from boiling over? So she did that. Sometimes one has to make difficult, spontaneous choices in life from that point of view. So she did that. Every mother would do that, I think. Would you let it just boil over and boil it over? It's going to, you know what burnt milk tastes like? And you're going to feed that to Krishna? And this is not only burnt milk. This is burnt milk from, because Krishna has been stealing, right? So Mother Yasoda is thinking, oh, maybe the sweets and the milk that we feed him here, he doesn't like those, and he likes the ones over there. So what we do is we get the best cows, and there's a certain kind of cow that is called Padmaganda, that they have the fragrance of lotuses, and they feed these cows, these specially good cows that give the best milk. They feed them the sweetest, tastiest, softest grass. And from that milk, they make special, special milk sweets for Krishna. And you want that to burn. But this is her devotional offering. This is the offering of the cows. You argue with her and Yoga Maya. And not only that. And not only that, what can you do when Leela gives you the inspiration to do that? This wonderful pastime can take place if she does that too. But I would say that every mother will do that. Huh?
Leela would say, Shekhar!
When Mother Yasoda says that, your life is perfect. Oh, my servant, take on. But see, the thing is, she, on that particular day, she had sent out all the servants. She made excuses to send them out. Because she wanted to do the service of churning the butter herself. She had sent them away, so she couldn't tell the servants to do it. She did a little rajniti and sent them away so she could do the service of churning herself and making the sweets. Even Rukmini Devi, she had so many servants, but why was she using the tamara on Krishna? She didn't give the service to others. I know, you still think this is good. Okay. And the other, also very, that question also turns. Sweetness. You have any questions, Aditya? Prabhu? Any other questions?
We say love and affection. Is there any difference in those two words? Why do they use those two words?
Why did Prabhupada use the two words?
Together, love and affection.
Okay. They're very often used together, I will say that. Because love is so overused, the word, like in Cantonese, they say, lo oi cha. You know what that means? I didn't think you did. It means, I love tea. But no one will say, I have affection for tea. Because affection is used for people. You don't say, even I have affection for my car. But sometimes we use the word love loosely in English. So I'll probably put them together, that's all I can think of. Yes?
How does, when a Rajavasi comes to the material world for our benefit, how does that same love of Krishna manifest?
Well, a Rajavasi will never be in the material world. Even for anyone's benefit, never be in the material world, just like Krishna never comes to the material world. He's always in the spiritual world, even though it appears that he may be in the material world. But he comes, sambhavam yatma mayaya, by his own internal potency, by his own mercy. To be in the material world means to be in material consciousness. To be in material consciousness means to be in
Maya.
Yes, in Maya. So Krishna is not in Maya, Mahamaya ever. He's in Yoga Maya. So if an exalted devotee, we'll make it, keep it on that level, comes to the material world for our benefit, he's always an exalted devotee. He's always in love with Krishna. So what is his consciousness going to be like? Going to be what? It's going to be overflowing, over flooded with love for Krishna. Were you thinking of something very specific?
I meant, how does it manifest? Like, how do we recognize their love for Krishna? Because obviously, when they come to this material world, they won't be showing these kind of pastimes when they come for our benefit.
Where do babies come from again? God brings them. God helps them. I like that answer. God tells them what to do, how to manifest their consciousness. But how can a... little baby have the vision to understand exactly what we're judged? So if we say they'll be crying, it's so easy to imitate crying, and that's what one of the things that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur had to fight against, that people would chant Krishna's names, roll on the ground, and tears will come from their eyes, and they would even sometimes take onions and put it under their armpits to make tears come from their eyes, and dance madly, wildly, with abandon, and foolish little children would think, oh, he must be such the most exalted devotee. Not foolish little children, just little children, because foolish is understood. because they're little children. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakura showed very clearly not to exhibit these external symptoms. And he was very, very internal, and sometimes it would, every once in a while it would come out, like when they installed the deities in Jagannath Puri near Alalanath. They went on a procession from Puri to Alalanath. Has anyone been there? Gaudiya Math there. Yeah. He was in the mood, a particular mood, because of separation, because that was the place of Mahaprabhu's separation. And for hours and hours, he just wandered around the forest there, crying. But that was very, 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 very rare. He would always check any internal feelings.
I don't mean those. There are certain symptoms that a pure devotee exhibits even when they come here, even not just the crying.
But I'm saying that there's the external, and then there's the internal. The internal. How your Prabhupada once told me, if someone calls up, wants to talk to you on the phone, but you don't want to talk to them, so you say, "Oh, tell them I have a headache." Oh, you don't say, "Tell them I have a headache." You say, "Oh, I have such a headache, I can't talk now." Do you have a headache or not? Huh? How does anyone know what's going on inside? Can anyone else know? No. So what point am I making? Not that you can't know. Not that no one can know, but someone has to be very more expert than we are and very mature. Just like if someone starts, I had a friend who didn't know how to play the sitar, but he was a little bit of a musician. So he'd get up and just do something or other, and he never, like the first time he played, and everyone would think, "Oh, how wonderful." And when one time Ravi Shankar was tuning his instrument before a concert, and at the end of that, everyone started clapping because no one had any idea what playing was. Because one has to be an expert, very advanced, to be able to judge the advancement of others. If a mathematician or a scientist comes in here, only another scientist who can speak the same language, who has the same training, who understands on the same levels he understands, can understand the quality of his statements. So therefore, you know what, you understand what the therefore is? Therefore we should keep our level of trying to understand at a level that's appropriate for us. Because we won't be able to understand like that. And we'll just, because it's not theoretical. It's not theoretical. It's something that's realized. We won't be able to understand, that's the answer. And if we try, we can easily become fooled. So therefore, we should keep very simple and take good advice from trusted people whose vision and his conceptual abilities is more mature. Like mommy and daddy. Yes, you want to.
If a scientist comes into the room.
Yes.
And I'm not a scientist.
Yes.
I might have a friend who studies some science.
Yes.
And And they might say to me, you know, he's really expert because he can do such and such and such and such.
Yes.
And, you know, he so clearly explains such and such. So I might need at least to know somebody who knows something about science before I can gain any appreciation of the scientist.
Yes.
So there needs maybe to be somebody in between me and the scientist.
I thought I did say something like that. We should. Yeah, we may not have that vision, and then it's also said that there's the Uttama Bhagavat, but the Uttama Bhagavat doesn't preach, right? Because he sees everyone as a better servant than him. So then there's the Uttama Bhagavat acting as a Madhyam Bhagavat. So how do you know if an Uttama Bhagavat is acting as a Madhyam Bhagavat or a Madhyam Bhagavat is acting as a Madhyam Bhagavat? You can really make your head spin if you like, if that's what the kind of things that you want to know. Well, I'm not even any kind of a Bhagavat. I'm basically a materialistic type of person who's trying to become a devotee, and I'm trying to understand everything way, way up here.
I mentioned in a simple way how to recognize a sadhu, or how to recognize someone who is.
Who's performing pure devotional service. Because there's different levels of performing pure devotional service too. Do you know that? So that that's describing the process that one should perform sadhana bhakti on. So that one can make it, if you perform sadhana bhakti on the process of anyabhilasa sunyam, then you can be elevated to prema bhakti. That's the goal. So how do you recognize? What are the symptoms of a sadhu? What's the right verse? Yeah, that's a good verse. Yeah, that's why it's there in the third canto. You know that verse? The Tikshava Karunika? Yeah, it's Kapila Muni's teaching. And those are the ones you should hear from. So when you find a sadhu, what are you supposed to do? You should hear from them. That's why. And then Satam Prasangam Mama Virya Samvigo. And then it will have some potency effect in the heart. But that's a different between that and if a Brijbasi comes to this world.
I think that's my next question. Specific practice was, and his disciples were there, and there was a pure devotee. He was having some interactions, I forgot the name. In fact,
he was having some what?
There was a pure devotee there. He was cooking some rice, sweet rice for Krishna, for his deity. And suddenly he just threw it away and he said, Anandiyari, you have already taken the sweet rice offered elsewhere. Because in the temple they had offered Krishna sweet rice and Krishna had already accepted it. So he said, I'm not cooking it. And
but that's not the symptom of a pure devotee.
Sarasvati Thakur, he told his disciples, don't go there, you can't understand his mood.
Yeah,
he told his disciples, you can't understand his mood, don't go there. And he used to duck his
deities
also in water.
He used to have. And he also used to smoke cigarettes, chew tobacco or something.
He told his disciples, you don't understand his mood, you don't understand him. Don't go there.
So, what is the relevance of that to this point?
So, here we're just asking that how do we recognize the symptoms? It's basically only through guru. We can't understand them.
It's very easy to. There are certain things that Prabhupada explained that were very simple. But you have to have devotees who you trust, who you can, you know, ask your questions to. Because we also have to understand that we can't understand things just theoretically that are about the spiritual world. Like one time, it was actually His Holiness Tamal Krishnamurti in 1967 though, asked Prabhupada, what's it like in the spiritual world in Goloka Vrindavan? And Prabhupada this was during the time of the Vietnam War in the United States, the young boys were being drafted into the army. And Prabhupada's reply was, "You won't be bothered by the draft board of the army." And everyone laughed. Because it was something that was real to them. But what can you understand about a place that's eternal, that's fully effulgent, that there's no time? There's no time. Well, time serves Krishna, but there's no linear progression of time. And that the trees, if you desire something from them, they immediately fulfill that desire. But all the desires are for Krishna's service. And how are we going to understand a place like that? Where everyone's body is composed of eternity, bliss, and knowledge. Where no one has material minds, but they have minds. And they have bodies. And the gopis are looking in the mirror, but they're not looking to see, they're looking for Krishna's pleasure. How are we going to understand that? So we can't actually understand, actually. But what we can do is we can chant Hare Krishna, and if we read the pastimes of Krishna, the Krishna book, and the Bhagavatam with proper explanations, then if we are fortunate, some little taste comes to our heart that, oh, I like these, I like Krishna, and I want to understand, and I study more, and I study the Bhagavad Gita, and then gradually and carefully I move forward. Because I've also seen that, not strictly according to the schedule, but say sort of every 10 years you sort of look back at what you were doing 10 years ago and you think, oh, I thought I knew everything then, but I actually didn't really know very much. I was pretty foolish 10 years ago. So then I can also assume that 10 years from now I'm going to be thinking that also. But yet, if we follow and chant and try sincerely to serve, then we do advance, and we meet our obstacles in life, and we do advance, and we learn how to depend on Krishna, and we learn to have less faith in our own abilities, and we learn to have more to trust Krishna. Why? Because we don't have much choice sometimes. And we learn to hold on to Him. And then, by His grace, then He gives us some realizations about things because of reciprocation with our humble, inept, sincere attempt to do something for His pleasure. I'm not really sure if we answered your question to a degree or on the level that you wanted it answered. But maybe you can talk again if you want to. Any other questions? Any comments?
I don't know. We can relate back to this pastime easily because as parents, we see our own children of that age being asked to do similar activities.
Yeah.
And then they do it, and everyone surrounding them enjoy those
activities. Yes. So just take that, the enjoyment that you get, and multiply it by what? What number?
Infinity.
And then get some idea of what it's like dealing with the all-attractive one. Yes. that's Krishna's pastimes are most approachable for that reason, because they are nara-lila. They are like the activities of this world, but they are not. But they are like them, so they're easily approachable.
Equally makes everyone think that they're actually nara-lila only, and therefore he's not God.
And therefore, you always need this interchange of Aishwarya, and therefore our benefit. Yes, exactly. But the Brijvasis, even if Krishna does something with Aishwarya Leela, the sweetness of their relationship overpowers that. So that they always find it, because if they see him, the Aishwarya will get in the way of their service. For us it increases our service, but for them it gets in the way of their service, because it will diminish their feeling of he needs my protection and my care and my love. Even though they can be aware of it, and this is one of the specialities of the intensity of the love of the residents of Vrindavan for Krishna, even if they become aware of it, it doesn't diminish their love for him. So it's very wonderful. What time is it now? Any other questions? Now, not only was there's part 5, and then there's part 6, and there's part 7, and there's part 8 of this chapter, but we're going to end at part 5, it appears. Or part 4, rather. Any other questions? Yes.
In the beginning of the session, you're saying about Krishna as a God and the Leelas, how do we reconcile these two things? He acts as a child, at the same time he's God. I was just thinking of trying to understand that. A couple of years ago in one of your retreats you talked about capacity and desire. And I was just thinking, for a jiva, his desire is always greater than his capacity. Whereas for Krishna, his capacity is greater than his desire. So when he desires to become like that...
Wait, his capacity is greater than his desire.
Yeah.
Did I say that?
No, no.
I didn't think I did.
No, you were saying about capacity and desire.
Yes, right.
And
but I didn't say his...
No, yeah, you were saying for...
Because his desire appears to be unlimited. And his capacity also appears to be unlimited.
Yeah, in the sense, his capacity is... Yeah. For a jiva, his desire is greater than his capacity.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
Because we desire to be Krishna,
yeah,
which is not in our capacity.
Yeah. But for Krishna, his capacity is unlimited.
Yes.
But he can desire to be limited by being a child or something like that.
But except that he's never a limited child. Yeah. He's never a limited. He's unlimitedly attractive when he's. And when he, because this is his intrinsic shakti, and he has a form. So carrying that logic, we would say he desires to limit himself by having a form, but he doesn't have a form that's limited. He has a form that's unlimited. Even though, from the material point of view, from the finite mind point of view, we'll say that he has a limited. A form, by definition, is a limitation, because if it's here, it's not there. But Krishna's form isn't like that. So what is Krishna's desire? Krishna's desire is to have a loving relationship with all living entities. That's his desire. So, which is quite an unlimited desire, and our purpose in that, we're meant to help Krishna fulfill that desire. Yes, did you want to continue? Did you want to say something?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's appropriate, but can it be said that whilst he's performing these pastimes, and you can say he's limited by our understanding, he's also performing pastimes in the Vaikuntha, in the world first, simultaneously.
And he's the supreme Brahman in everyone's heart.
Going on, he's really in the atom, and that's all there as well.
Yeah, that's definitely there. But also, it's the closest example that I can think of is either like the one of a king when he's sitting at the table, or Disraeli when he's on all fours and his grandson is riding on his back. He's still the powerful, but his mind isn't quite on it at that time, because that's the nature of the loving relationship. That was the example that Prabhupada gave, and that gives him more pleasure than the other using his Aishwarya, his powers, like that. It's more intimate. So it's not that he's still not the he's not the prime minister when he's doing that. So it's like a mood. But as soon as the demon appears or something like that, the mood shifts. Or as soon as he has to lift Govardhan Hill, his mood shifts. And he immediately displays it. So where was the opulence, where was this potency while he wasn't in that mood? When Mother Yasoda ties him up, where is the potency that disallows her from tying him up, because he's unlimited? How could you circumscribe something that's unlimited with a rope? That was the problem, because Krishna was afraid. He was afraid of being chastised by Mother Yasoda, so therefore, naturally, without him wanting to, his Aishwarya Shakti manifests and wouldn't allow Mother Yasoda to do it. It's all the independent workings of his shaktis too. And then when he saw Mother Yasoda had worked so hard and was perspiring and tired and frustrated, then his Kripa Shakti came in, which interestingly enough, Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says is his most prominent and dominant and powerful shakti, is mercy. And that stopped the dominance of the Aishwarya Shakti. And therefore Krishna found himself bound. So he didn't want to be bound, just like every child doesn't want to get punished and limited. But he had his Aishwarya Shakti move into action. And then, but then his heart melted with his Kripa Shakti. So we can understand it to some degree, according to the words of the Acharyas. When who? Is your mother still in this world? Yeah. Yes. So when you go, do you visit her?
She's right now in Melbourne.
Oh, yes. She's not here right now, though. But sometimes does she treat you like a little boy a little bit?
Many
times. Yes. And do you feel like a little boy? Does it?
Yes and no.
Okay. Yes and no. It's like that. So the mood of the love, the loving parent, it brings out a mood in you. So the mood of Mother Yasoda is so powerful that it just brings out this little boy mood in Krishna, and he's relishing her love so much because it's so powerful, it's so complete, and it's love. So it brings out that mood in him, like a little boy. But you're still the teacher, the father, everything. doesn't mean that you're only a little boy of Krishna. But Vrindavan is the place where Krishna can be a little boy. Because there, no one is going to him and saying, oh, Krishna, I have this problem, I have this problem, I have this problem, I have this problem, I have this problem. The only problem they have is they want to be with Krishna.
The
couple
first
used
to go to Krishna whenever they had a problem.
Like what?
The cowherd boys.
Like what problem?
Like forest fire. With the cowherd boys. The demons. The demons that they were coming to Krishna.
Yeah. Yeah, we spoke about that yesterday. This is actually such a wonderful verse when the cowherd boys wrote to Krishna. It's not in this book where they say, Krishna, Krishna, is it right that your devotees suffer like this? Please protect us. We have no other shelter but you. Because where Krishna is everything, Krishna Mata, Krishna Pitta, Krishna Pranadana, he's everything for them. They don't look anywhere else. So when there's, so the there's a rasa in being saved by Krishna, your best friend. They're so proud of him. Oh, Krishna, did you ever have a friend who was really, really good? You know, like the best hockey player or something like that, or whatever. Or really, really intelligent or something. You have a friend like that, and he's my friend. So they were so proud of Krishna. So there came a time when, with the Agasura demon, when Krishna was playing with the coward boys, and the coward boys thought that the Agasura demon was a okay, and actually Agasura was a huge Agajara, like a huge python with his mouth opened up. And the boys said, this is a cave, we're going to go and play in the cave. And some of the boys said, no, it's a snake. And then they said, anyway, Krishna will save us. Now, when they were walking in, Krishna was watching. And he didn't want them to enter. And they wanted to enter. And he didn't want them to enter. And they wanted to enter because they wanted Krishna to save us. But Krishna didn't want them to enter. And they wanted to enter. And Krishna's Lila Sakti took the side of the devotee and overrode Krishna's desire. There's subtleties of rasa in there. So there, Krishna, Krishna, save us from the forest fire, has to do with Krishna. And my Krishna, Krishna, help me on my exam, has to do with me. But yet, when the devotee calls out naturally, because a devotee who shelters only Krishna calls out to Krishna to help him, there is no fault on the devotee's point. We mentioned that yesterday. There's no fault at all, because it's just completely natural. It's natural. And we should do that. Because who else do we have if we're on that level? Instead of just, oh, I'm in a difficulty. Did I bring my credit cards with me? First thought is, oh, Krishna. So that's to be encouraged always. And Mahaprabhu taught that himself when he was traveling in South India. Rakshaman Payaman, Krishna, 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 Krishna. Rakshaman.
Krishna, 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 Krishna.
Thank you.
thousands of stared at the forest fire, attacking them on all sides. They became fearful. The voice then approached Krishna and offered them shelter. Just as those who are disturbed by the fear of death approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the boys addressed them as follows. Oh Krishna, Krishna, most powerful one, oh Rama, you whose prowess never fails, please save your devotees who are about to be burned by this forest fire and have come to take shelter of you. Krishna, certainly your own friends shouldn't be destroyed. O knower of the nature of all things, we have accepted you as our Lord, and we have souls surrendered to you. Hearing these pitiful words from his friends, the Supreme Lord Krishna told them, just close your eyes and don't be afraid. Close your eyes? Don't we criticize the rabbits when they're in danger? They're being chased for stopping and closing their eyes? And the ostriches for putting their heads in the sand to escape from danger? And Krishna said, close your eyes. Don't you know Krishna knows some tantra? And you have to practice these kind of tantra mantras alone, and no one can be around, so if we close our eyes, Krishna will be able to do it. Oh. So all the cowherd boys closed their eyes. And then that fire became as small and as cooling as one drop of nectar. And Krishna went. Some commentators say that Krishna told them to close their eyes because he got in so much trouble for eating dirt, and he didn't want them to tell Mother Yasoda that your boy has eaten dirt before and now he's eating fire. Who knows what she would do to him? So they closed their eyes, and then the Supreme Lord, the master of all mystic power, opened his mouth, swallowed the terrible fire, and saved his friends from danger. And then Krishna said, open your eyes. They opened their eyes and they were amazed to not only find that the fire had gone, it had vanished, but they and the cows were back in the cooling shade of the Bandiravat, the tree in Bhaktirava. And they opened their eyes and they thought, what has happened? Did we imagine the forest fire? What has happened? And they just looked at Krishna and continued playing with him.
Krishna, 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 Krishna,
Krishna. When the coward boys saw that they had been saved from the forest fire by the Lord's mystic power, which is manifested by his internal potency, thought, Krishna did that. He must be some sort of a demigod. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The cowherd boys of Vrindavan simply love Krishna as their only friend and their exclusive object of devotion. And to increase their ecstasy, Krishna displayed to them his mystic potency and saved them from a terrible forest fire. But what to do if they thought of him as a demigod? Then how could they just play with him? Prabhupada continues, you cowherd boys could never give up their ecstatic loving friendship with Krishna. Therefore, rather than considering Krishna to be God, after they saw his extraordinary power, they thought that perhaps he was a demigod. But since Krishna was their beloved friend, and they used to push each other and take each other's lunch, and sometimes Krishna would make them cry, and sometimes they would make Krishna cry, well, if he was a demigod, they thought, well, they were on the same level with him, but we also must be demigods. And in this way, Krishna's cowherd friends became overwhelmed with ecstasy.
Jack Prabhupada. Sometimes tune in with Jack Prabhupada.
Friends, equals Krishna.